Like to call this regular council meeting to order. Would you all please rise for the invocation?
We meet to serve our community and endeavor to be worthy custodians of all that has been entrusted to us. Let us be concerned only for what will promote good government. May we bring to our council chamber minds that think and hearts that feel, so that in our deliberations we may display imagination, wisdom, and courage, and the will to do our work for the good of all.
Amen.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present, save and except Councillor McDermott, who is absent for personal reasons.
Thank you. There's no addendum this evening. There are just a couple of announcements. First of all, I want to congratulate the Fort Erie Midget hockey team for getting to the Ontario quarterfinals, and they stretched it out to the fifth game. They came back down 2-0, were able to win up in Ajax, and well, they won here, then they won back in Ajax, but they couldn't quite make it in the fifth game. But congratulations to the team. They played a very good series, and it was very entertaining hockey. On a very positive point for people who live on and use Dominion Road, I can advise that the Public Works Committee at the region has approved the design build project for Dominion Road. That matter will be dealt with by the Regional Council this Thursday evening, and if it passes, design work will commence immediately, with construction probably the late summer to commence. That's a project that will take about a year to complete because it involves not only the complete reconstruction of the road, but also the replacement of the regional trunk water main and the installation of a new local water line, distribution line. So let's all hope things go well on Thursday evening. The Bowl for Kids' Sakes, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, is scheduled for next week, and the town, I believe, is going to be bowling on Saturday, March the 11th. Some more particulars of that next council meeting. And finally, I just wanted to mention that March the 21st will be the State of Fort Erie reception. It's going to be a different format this year, and there'll be some more information coming forth on that as well at the next council meeting. That then takes us to disclosures of pecuniary interest. There are none. There are also no public notices of any upcoming meetings. The regional councillor is not available this evening. He is he's being occupied by, I believe, a Good Roads Association conference. So then that takes us to presentations and delegations. And the first presentation and delegation is by Fred Lowes, the principal of not quite the Greater Fort Erie Secondary School, but the principal to become, and also Stacey Veld, the superintendent of business services and treasurer of the board, District School Board of Niagara. Good evening. You're not officially the principal yet, are you?
Well, I was officially announced 2 years ago.
You're not.
I will be.
But they're only paying you as the principal of Ridgeway Crystal Beach.
This is correct. Yeah, I'm not getting 2 salaries.
That's too bad.
That would be nice. Yeah. Stacey would never allow that to happen.
That's why she's following you.
Exactly, yes. Well, thank you, Your Worship, Mayor Redekop, and Town Council and staff, as well as our guests here this evening, for allowing us to share with you an update on Greater Fort Erie Secondary School and the Community Center for the Arts built adjacent to this entity. At this time, I will turn our presentation over to Ms. Veld to speak on the next slide.
Fred, good evening. I would just like to present to you a brief update on the construction progress. Overall, the footings, foundations, and concrete walls are complete. So you can see the buildings right across the street, so I'm sure you're following the progress yourselves. But the underground plumbing is 85% complete. With respect to the east wing, which is the academic wing to the front, it is 100% watertight, 40% roofing complete, and the flooring and the drywall have commenced in that area. With respect to the technology classrooms, the masonry, flooring, roof joints, and decking are all 100% complete, and the area is watertight. For the gymnasium, again, the masonry, flooring, roof joints, and decking are also 100% complete and watertight. The Learning Commons, all those same aspects are 100% complete. And with respect to the theater, the steel structure and the masonry walls are 100% complete. So we have begun the interior work. Windows have been delivered and are starting to get installed right now, but we're working on painting and flooring inside, that it's all watertight. And we're very thankful for the weather this year that has made construction a little bit easier. And now I'll turn it back to Fred to talk about some of the particulars of the theater.
Thank you, Stacey. So this slide here before you is the profile of the Greater Fort Erie Center for the Arts as viewed from Sunset Avenue. And you can also view this quite clearly as you drive down Garrison Road towards Peacebridge. And this is the floor plan for the Center for the Arts. And I'd like to mention at this point that in designing the theater, much like the rest of the various parts of the school, those with expertise in theater and the arts were brought in to give input on its design. We had 7 highly respected DSBN drama teachers involved in this process. Our very own Fort Erie resident and teacher, Mr. Vince Marinaccio, was involved with this. Outside theater groups such as Garrison Little Theater, Linus Hand Productions from Niagara Falls were brought in for this consultation process, as our local dance studio with Peacock School of Dance for their input, and a consultant from Hamilton that specializes in designing theaters throughout the world. When we gave them the budget of $3 million, their group decided to show us a theater for $33 million. There are 2 green rooms with shared washroom. These green rooms are change rooms for basically for the performers, and through the consultation process, they do not feel performers should be sharing bathrooms with those in attendance for the shows those evenings. There's 2 theater lockup rooms, control booth and a sound booth separate from one another, and through the consultation process they said that's the best way to have a theater designed if you're starting from scratch, to have both of those booths separate from one another. It's a box office lockup and a marquee box which would all face into the atrium, which is part of the main thoroughfare within Greater Fort Erie Secondary. What you see before you is the fixed seating. It's a New York style. Rest assured that that pattern is not going to be in there. It's going to be I refer to that as a 70s Greyhound bus, but that's the actual seat. It's going to start, you notice in the slide before, it'll be red at the beginning rows, then it'll become a darker red, then maroon, and dark maroon at the back of the house. So it's 531 seat capacity. And this could increase slightly if the 16 barrier-free seats were not to be used, which is a possibility. So there's 515 New York-styled seats, 16 barrier-free seats, which is basically there's no barrier. Those in wheelchairs or walkers, they can go to these certain areas, and they could sit at those spots. There's 211 seats in the front house, which is ideal for smaller dinner theater performances, and there's 320 seats at the back house. And I did mention here that the rake ensures great sight lines from every seat. The rake in the front house is a gradual decline to the bottom part of the stage, the lower part of the stage, and so someone who were in a wheelchair could access that front row. They could wheel down there and then put their wheelchair on the side and then sit in the front row if that's where they wanted to sit. And then the back house, the rake is actually steeper and it steps all the way up to the very back row. And so the profile of each of these rows in the consultation process, there should not be a bad seat in the house because the sight lines should be very good from every seat. And one thing I'd like to mention while we're on this one slide is that probably about a year and a half ago when we were looking at the theater, the Center for the Arts within the town of Fort Erie, there was a lot of discussion about this community center for the arts and how do outside groups in the arts community look to book space at the Center for the Arts. So great thinking that took place about a year and a half ago. This April would be the month, April we identified a year and a half ago, so this will be the first one. I, as the principal of Greater Fort Erie Secondary School, we'll put the invitation out to the arts community within the town of Fort Erie, and the word will spread to those outside of the town of Fort Erie, and we will have a series of meetings in April to start booking that space for September 2017, rolling to August 2018. And I'm happy to announce that tentatively booked already, and this will be solidified in April, the Dominion Repertory Theater have 3 weekends that they're looking at for November. Linus Hand Productions out of Niagara Falls, they're looking at the first 3 weeks in December, and that'll be Monday through Saturday. They currently hold these shows at the Christmas time in the Scotiabank Center in Niagara Falls, so their business model is willing to take a chance and see if they can make it work down here in the town of Fort Erie. He figures that'll be about 20,000 tickets sold over those 3 weeks. And then the powers that be at Peacock School of Dance have, I don't know if they asked, I think they just told me that the last weekend in May is going to be there. So there'll be more to come from that April meeting, and every year, long after I leave as principal, these April meetings will continue so that we can book up the theater space here at Fort Erie Center for the Arts. Next slide shows a breakdown of the building costs. $3 million, and as you are fully aware, that $3 million price tag, the first $1 million came from the town of Fort Erie, $500,000, and the District School Board of Niagara was the other $500,000, leaving our Community Center for the Arts Fundraising Committee the task of raising the additional $2 million. Currently, I'm very happy to report that we have received commitments of $605,000 from the generous supporters within the town of Fort Erie and from outside the town of Fort Erie. And there is an upcoming fundraising event on May 20th, Party on the Patio, Fire and Ice, organized on the strength of last year's successful Hollywood North event, gala, by counselors Rena Butler, Stephen Passero, Kim Zanko. And our community committee is also currently in talks with various groups for additional donations and hope to have some good news on those fronts sooner rather than later. That's the end of our formal presentation, and hopefully we've left enough time for any questions.
Yes, thank you very much, both of you. That's very informative. Any members of council have any questions? Councillor Zanko and then Councillor Passero.
Thank you very much to both of you. That was a very informative presentation. Just one question with regard to the 531 seat capacity. Is that fairly comparable to other theaters in the area?
I would say yes. It depends on the theater groups. I know there's the Fire Hall in Niagara Falls is 150 seats, and Centennial, the theater at Centennial Secondary would be the largest with 1,000 seats. Lakeshore Catholic in Port Colborne would be about the same size, 500 seats. And Niagara Falls, there are no schools, I believe, that have the theater space. So,
good to know. Thank you.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Thank you, Fred and Stacey. Just a question regarding the audio-visual, the $140,000 budget. I'm just looking for assurance that it's being designed and implemented in such a way that it's going to stand the test of time as technology changes going forward, because it does change so rapidly. And the best time to make those allowances are during the construction period versus a retrofit later on. Any comments as far as what we're looking at as far as lighting allowance or the backbone technology that's going in to allow for future changes?
I personally can't speak to the finite details of all of the AV equipment. I know that the lights that will be there will be the LED lights. The one thing about this partnership with the town of Fort Erie and the DSBN is down the road, if there are retrofits or if one of those lights go out, and I think they're about $900 each, that's the responsibility of the DSBN.
I can add that what we're putting in place right now is the technology state of the art as it is right now, understanding that technology does change, but it is what is recommended at this point in time. As Fred mentioned, typically when we have theaters, part of the revenue received from rentals is always going back towards the lights replacements, electronic replacements. So we ensure that we have funds available that should we have to replace, repair, lights are out, we put them in. So that's part of our business plan as we go forward, and we'll certainly ensure that that's there for the long term.
Excellent. Thank you, and we'll see you May 20th.
Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Worship. Thank you very much for the presentation, Mr. Lowe's, Ms. Feld. I just want to thank you for bringing us up to date. The design looks great. Looking forward to seeing the finished product. One thing in your presentation that you commented on was some out-of-town groups that are piquing interest, and hopefully this theater does lead to more people like Alan Berilio from Niagara Falls, who won the Oscar last night for his short. So I'm glad to see that we'll have a state-of-the-art theater here where we can grow our own homegrown talent. Thank you.
Any other counselors? Mr. Lowe's, I just wanted to question you a little bit about the comment that you made regarding booking the facility, the theater, over time. And has there been any contemplation of having some type of committee, perhaps involving representation from the municipality and perhaps at large?
We have talked about a committee. I know the 40 Arts Council, ACT Cafe, and other groups from within the town of Fort Erie, very open to having town representation there as well. Because, you know, with this partnership, and I really reiterate this, Mr. Marinaccio, who's going to be the drama teacher, that's not his playground. That's not where the kids are going to eat lunch. This is a community theater. So when outside groups come in, it's a theater. Mm-hmm. And that wear and tear of that the daily lunchtime traffic is not going to happen. Now, if the students are practicing for rehearsals for a show coming up, that would be different. And we can definitely discuss that. I know that the SBN and the town would be more than welcome to add a representative from the town of Fort Erie.
Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Worship. Just to make a comment along those lines based on your last comment, Fred. Mr. Marinaccio and I toured a theater in Burlington a couple of years ago in preparation for hopefully being at this point one day. And the model that they had set up was that when somebody rented the theater, a portion of the rental charge actually went to the drama program at the school and paid to have students actually operating all of the equipment for their productions. Is that something we're looking at? Because I'd be hesitant just to allow an outside group to come in, say, hey, here's our X number of dollars. Yep, here's the key of the control room. See you on Monday. How is that going to work when outside groups rent the theater to protect our investment that we're putting in, not just for the theater, but the control room, the sound room, all of the equipment and the props?
Well, I could use Linus Hand Productions as an example. So Linus Hand Productions, I know in sitting down with Mr. Hand, they'll be bringing in their own ushers. However, there's also the opportunity for some of our students to either get a stipend for helping out with those duties or community involvement hours. And through the school programming, the students there will learn how to work the sound booth and the other booth as well, as well as all the lights, because there's the catwalk up top. So that will all be in-house. Mr. Marinaccio and I have had a lot of discussions about the future, and looking to the future, as he's involved in Garrison Little Theater and many other groups within the town. Centennial Secondary School, their model is there's a resident individual that knows that theater inside and out. So when the outside groups come in, part of the booking is a stipend towards that individual to smooth things over, make sure that everything's running properly. So if Mr. Hand brings in somebody for the sound booth, this person would ensure that it's a very smooth transition and it's operating the way it's supposed to. And as far as the rental fees, I've looked into that. I'm a selfish town of Fort Erie resident. And so with the funds that come in through the rentals, don't quote me exactly on the percentages, but for those funds, about 40% would go to the board coffers, and that would be like for any other rentals that they have within the school board, and that helps with those upgrades or things that break or things that have to be replaced. Mm-hmm. About 20% would go towards the caretaking overtime staff. It's weekends, evenings, extra cleaning. And approximately 40% would go right back to Greater Fort Erie Secondary School. That would be a line in my school budget or whoever the principal is. And the nice part about that is the duty I'm charged with, every cent that I spend has to be for students. Days within the town of Fort Erie helping our young people.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to see it open. I think a lot of people are.
Any other counselors? Thank you very much, both of you, for your presentation. We're very much looking forward to the May 20th event and then the grand opening in September of the new school with all of its amenities, not just the theater, but also the culinary program. It should be very exciting. The track. I used to be able to run around the track. I'll probably just drive around it now.
Made you a golf cart.
Yeah, golf cart. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That takes us then to our next delegation. That's Mr. David Watt and Mr. Julian Bell, who are with GM Blue Plan Engineering Limited. And before we start with them, Councillor Lubert, you have a resolution, I believe.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Butler, that Council extends the GM Blue Plan Engineering Limited delegation time to 20 minutes.
Any members have any questions or comments? All those in favor? That is carried. Mr. Watt.
Your Worship, thank you, members of Council and senior staff. My name is David Watt. I'm here with Mr. Julian Bell. I'm just the project manager for this project. We've only got 20 minutes. We hear that loud and clear. So we've got a lot of information to convey to you, so I may talk like an auctioneer at some point to this presentation, but it's in the interest of time. I'm not going to bother with the agenda. I'm going to highlight the team that worked on this project. So it's about 8 months of work. Mr. Walsh, Stojanovic, and Mr. Boutin, and Robert Judd on your side, but myself as project manager. I'm also branch manager of our Hamilton office, our Stony Creek office. Julian Bell is our corporate lead for hydraulic modeling, so a key component of the study is to look at the capacity of the system and also your non-revenue water. Lindsay Bowman is a junior engineer that did some of the hydraulic analysis, and the other three folks were involved in a statistical analysis on service outages due to breaks, which I think you'll find particularly interesting. Not necessarily a good news story, but interesting. So in terms of project background, you had a master plan done in 2007, and generally speaking, it said that your existing system was sufficient from a capacity perspective to meet the forecasted demand for that period. The result of that was a 10-year, $12 million water capital program that focused primarily on cast iron water main replacement and 4-inch to 100 millimeter to 6-inch, 150 millimeter replacement. The reason these are priorities is because these mains represent capacity restrictions within the system, especially on dead ends, where you can't get sufficient fire flow. And there's also Stevensville looping. Post-master plan, your staff have been focused on implementing the capital plan. During that time, there was also a regional water and wastewater master plan. Your staff have kept the GIS inventory up to date to feed your TCA or your PSAB reporting, as well as continuously improve their knowledge of the system. It was a hydraulic model update, which I actually did as part of another firm, development charges study update, and of course, Mr. Boutin always does continuous flow monitoring and hydrant tests on the system. In 2015, you had an asset management plan prepared. This was what we would call a high-level estimated service life risk/risk-based plan. This plan focused on using estimated service life as a proxy of condition. Essentially, uniform service life is applied to the pipes plus 1 day, and you replace the pipe. We all know it's a great broader perspective on your investment needs, but it's just that, it's a broad perspective, because we know many things last so much longer than expected, and some fail prematurely. So the analysis as part of this study is a bit more detailed, and it focuses in on statistical models with respect to the condition of your system. It did not have a deterioration analysis, so while valid the plan is valid, we're taking a much more detailed approach in this plan. We believe that the asset management plan may have overestimated So you now require a comprehensive update. You're nearing the end of the 10-year capital plan. Just so happens our GM Blue Plan as a firm has been retained to do the regional water wastewater master plan along with a lot of other master plans locally. You've got a system non-revenue water issue, which Mr. Walsh has produced several reports on. And you've got some pretty, the good news story, you've got some pretty large proposed development areas. So our job is to answer whether we can adequately service those areas. So this plan's a little bit different than all the master plans you've done in the past. Our company specializes in integrating growth or capacity with what we call state of good repair. Traditional master plan would look forward, 25-year horizon, and say, Canadian Motor Speedway is coming in, what size pipe do I need to accommodate that development? We also look at the state of good repair or the deferred maintenance within the system. So if you want to think of this as a master asset management plan, we introduce customer level of service. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, and technical levels of service. So essentially this is how do investments in the system relate to what the end use customer experience is. Part of an international standard for asset management, IAM standard. So it focuses on plan, do, check, act. You plan to do improvements, you do them. But what you currently probably don't do is check them against key performance indicators, act, refine the plan, and it's meant as a continuous improvement loop. And we're going to introduce the concept of key performance indicators. Julian, and I'm going to go back to me, and I guess the last five slides?
The last couple of slides, yeah. So the first component of the project really comes down to how is your system performing in terms of hydraulic level of service, water pressure, flows to customers, and what do we need to do to that system to ensure that we are meeting those objectives and that as growth comes on board, we are able to meet those objectives. So the first real step is what we did here is really coming up with the project vision statements and project objectives. So really the vision statement is kind of more this guiding principles of what we're trying to achieve. And really the objective here is we want to meet the needs of existing users, meet regulatory requirements and legislative requirements. We want to be able to support growth through this plan, and we want to do it in such a way that it's integrated with the region's growth and system strategy, because this is a two-tier system where it's an integrated system, so we need to do it in a coordinated manner. And then lastly is we need to do it in an optimized manner so that you're meeting your long-term needs in the most efficient way. So that's where really the state of good repair integration component comes in, so we can come up with a better optimized program. At the end of the day, we're coming up with a detailed 10-year capital program, a longer-term capital program, and strategy for how to fund this program on the long term, and then a framework for how to implement that on the long term. So this project was done in many stages, but essentially it came down to the first step was do the detailed inventory of the existing system performance, hydraulic modeling, get a good state of the current level of service, performance, and how growth is going to be impacted. The next stage is really come up with the plan, so to address any identified deficiencies, and then once that has been finalized, come up with the communications, final capital program, and then finally communicate that to you, council, and public. So just some background on the system. It's a two-tier system, so there is the region system who is responsible for treatment, transmission of water to the system, and they're also responsible for storage and pumping, whereas you, the town, are responsible for the distribution to the local users. So the region's responsible for making sure there is enough water in your system and that the town system is responsible for getting it there to the local customer and ensuring that there's enough capacity in the system so that when you turn on the tap, there's enough water and pressure, and when there's a fire, there's enough fire flow protection to provide that service. So in the context, you can see in the breakdown, there's about 14 kilometers of regional pipe where there's 267 kilometers of town pipe. And as was mentioned previously, this master plan was done in conjunction with the region's master plan. So the region's going through the process of coming up with the strategy for how to service supply and transmission, pumping and storage for the town long term. And that information was fed into this master plan so that we're ensuring that when we're coming up with our long-term strategy and capital program, we're not going in a different direction as the region, because it can often happen that the region's best solution may differ from the town's best solution, and if done in isolation, we come up with different strategies. So this was done collectively. And as a benefit to the town, some of the regional strategies that they plan on implementing for the town actually provide quite a significant benefit to the town, and ultimately has resulted in a reduction in total number of upgrades that you would need to make if those regional upgrades weren't being made as well. And then some of the key outcomes of the regional strategy are there's a number of facilities that are scattered throughout the town. There's a storage facility and pump station in Stevensville, and an existing reservoir on Central Avenue in the old town of Fort Erie. And those facilities are all going to be consolidated into a single large elevated tower elsewhere in the town, which will allow the system to operate more efficiently and hopefully be better able to manage pressure fluctuations within the system as compared to today. So here we kind of have a bit of a graphic of what that's planned. So really one large elevated tank is proposed to go out near Bowen Road, and then to eliminate and decommission the existing elevated tank and reservoir. So what was also important to plan for was the growth aspects. So this plan supports projected growth out to 2041, which based off of the regional planning numbers and places to grow allocations does represent quite a substantial growth to the town. So in terms of populations going from around 28,000 today, growing out to almost 40,000 people to 2041. So this is over 30% growth in population, as well as a supporting growth in jobs. Also incorporated into there are allowances for some of the major development areas that have been previously identified. So the Canadian Motor Speedways, the marina, the business park, and really accounting for the planned intensification and infill within. So again, this performance was done on the first step was on a hydraulic level of service. And so what that really means is when we're doing hydraulic level of service, we're looking at three things: pressure, fire flow, and water quality. And what we mean by that is pressure is, are we ensuring that we have enough pressure in the system so that we're not getting low pressure complaints, and when people turn on the faucets or flush the toilet on the second floor, they're getting good pressure, but it's not so high that, you know, it's blowing out people's services, breaking fixtures. Fire flow, what that means is really whenever the system is effectively designed for providing fire protection to the community. But it's ensuring that there is sufficient fire flow, so when there is a fire happening in the system and the fire department hooks into those hydrants, there's enough capacity locally to fight the magnitude of fire based on local land use. So the level of fire protection that we're providing in local residential areas, there's enough fire protection for a hydrant so that we can maintain the fire within a house. And then when we're going into industrial areas where there's potential for large fires, you know, there's enough capacity to hook onto three or four hydrants. And then the last component is water quality. So it's ensuring that the system is configured and there's enough flow through that we're able to maintain good water quality residuals within. Then the last component that we looked at was state of good repairs. Once we've achieved all of those objectives, what remaining upgrades or replacements do we need to do in the system to address our state of good repair? So our deteriorating assets, reducing breaks. This is also done in parallel as well, so that when we're looking at system upgrades in a water system, because the way they're configured, there could be two or three or four different options to address the same issue. And so looking at that, we really looked at, okay, what water mains would we need to replace as part of our state of good repair? And can we target the upgrades on those ones, do either localized upsizing or bringing the upgrade earlier and address the issue, as opposed to doing an entirely different set of upgrades and then still having to do those state of good repair upgrades? So it was a plan to do a two-for-one, so to speak, upgrade to address two objectives at once. Right. And so here it kind of shows a figure that generally shows the performance of how the system is performing under its current configuration with growth out to 2041. So really what it's showing is a bunch of stars which are indicating where there's existing fire flow capacity deficiencies. It may look like there's a lot of stars, but in the context of your overall system, there's a very small percentage of your system is projected to be not necessarily meeting the full stated objectives that we're trying to achieve by 2041 when we layer on growth. But the fortunate thing that we were able to notice is that a lot of these issues were clustered within older areas where there was small diameter cast iron water main, which was really the target of the state of good repair projects. And when we address all of those capacity, those state of good repair replacements, there was very few additional upgrades that needed to be done. And those were mainly targeted either in areas where there were dead ends or in areas where we had large growth potential or areas where we're seeing a change in the land use, which was triggering an increase in the fire flow needs. And so ultimately, when we layer all of that on top of each, sorry, this component here is just showing a history of the state of good repair. So it's really, as part of the second component, is these are all the water mains within the system that we're showing poor performance in terms of a break history. So a history of breaking more than two breaks over the last couple of years. So when we layered all that together, we came up with a total capital program. And we organized it into five sets of priorities. So priority one was essentially the existing 2017 and 2018 capital program that had already been identified. And it was very good to see that through our, when we did this work independently and identified all of our state of good repair upgrades and all of our hydraulic capacity upgrades, that all the projects that you already had in the 2017-2018 capital program were flagged. And so we just carried those two forward because they've already gone through your budget cycle, and we were already going to be flagged anyway, so we just left them as is so we wasn't have additional work on city on town staff. And the next priority that we targeted were really all the water mains where we had a deficiency in terms of state of good repair, history of water main breaks, and we're flagging for upgrade or replacement to address a hydraulic deficiency. Then the third priority, which we came in, were all the water mains that we would be flagging for a hydraulic deficiency, which didn't have a history of water main breaks, but did fall into the category of small diameter or cast iron water mains, which would be on our hit list moving forward. Then the fourth priority were all of the remaining water mains with a break history. And then the fifth priority were all the remaining cast iron and small diameter water mains that we would want to replace. Good repair program. And so when you see through the program that the vast majority of the upgrades that we do need to affect to the system under this strategy are really more the state of good repair water mains. When we look at the total program, about a third of it are tied to the hydraulic deficiencies, so really the categories 1, 2, and 3, and that categories, priorities 4 and 5, are the remaining state of good repair. So what that means is if water mains had indefinite life and didn't deteriorate over time, you would only have to address categories 1, 2, and 3, and then we would achieve our level of service, so hydraulic performance, out to 2041, so this is over the next 25 years. The remaining categories 4 and 5, those are to address the deteriorating assets and being able to maintain that level of service over time with renewal of the system. And my colleague, Mr. Watt, will discuss that in further detail a little bit later. So this is really what the final capital program looks like on the map. And we don't have it shown here, but it really is clustered around where there are existing cast iron water mains in the older parts. So again, it's a good news story in the sense that as part of your standard state of good repair program and the strategy that you're already going through, There are a lot of opportunities to do small number of localized upsizings, and that's going to be sufficient to support growth out to 2041. Then the other component that was highlighted and reviewed as part of the master plan is really addressing the non-revenue water issue within the town. So currently the town has quite a high non-revenue water, so about 40%. So what that means is for every 100 liters of water that the region is treating and providing to you, 40 liters of that water is not being billed to customers. It's either being lost through leaks or through hydrant flushing or through unmetered usage. So it's a relatively high percentage, which is resulting in roughly about $1.2 million in 2015 in lost revenue potential. So the town, through Mr. Walsh, has already presented a preliminary program for how to address that. And one of those key components in there was really a more comprehensive leak detection program. And so as part of this master plan, we did set out the frameworks for that more comprehensive leak detection program and have laid out an initial roadmap in a process for how do we break up the system into individual areas so that we can do more detailed monitoring and investigation to start to track down and pinpoint those leaky areas so that we can really start effectively addressing this non-revenue water system.
You did.
So I'm going to introduce the concept of level of service. I don't know if it's presented to you before, but essentially level of service statement is what you're willing to provide to the public. So staff and our team sat down and we came up with this level of service statement. So point your attention to the adjectives that are used because they talk to the quality, the quantity, and the availability of service. So this can be applied to any asset group, parks and rec, libraries, water, wastewater, roads. So the town of Fort Erie will strive to provide safe, clean drinking water, so it's qualitative, of adequate pressure and flow, which is quantitative, with minimum service interruptions. So why didn't we say no service interruptions? Simply put, you can't afford no service interruptions, meaning you couldn't provide full redundancy in the system to guarantee 100% uptime. You had about 45 water main breaks yet last year. Key takeaway here is, I think your engineering department's always, and operations for that matter, are always asking for money, investment money within infrastructure. What we're trying to do here is couple their technical requirements. You'll see a box there, technical level of service. We're coupling what they do as engineers and technical people with the customer experience, and it really does work. What I've offered to do, I know we have limited time tonight, is come back and do a bit of a workshop in conjunction with the Wastewater Master Plan with Council. On customer levels of service and key performance indicators. Here's the historic break record for the last 10 years, from 2005 to 2016. The red bar, generally speaking, the red bar is a bit of an anomaly. We had a very cold winter that winter. If you have prolonged periods of cold, you'll end up with a slightly higher number of breaks. Generally, the trend line is increasing. And what that's telling us is this general deterioration within the system. Now, you'll have municipalities that will look at the number of times a water main breaks, and they'll say, once it's broken five times, we should replace it. We look at it a little bit differently. Did it break five times in 5 years, 50 years, or since you installed it? So we look at the time between breaks. If that's getting smaller, that's telling us that that is deteriorating at a quicker rate. So what we've done is taken this trend and we've done some fairly complex analysis on it, which I'll present in the next slide. But basically 60%, I'll point your attention to the top left graph, so about 60% of your water main breaks are attributable to cast iron pipe, but they only make up about 20% of the pipes in your system. So they're in a deteriorated state. Your next worry will be asbestos cement water main, which is starting to fail. Somebody asked the question, why don't we just replace it all? This is why. On the left-hand side, you'll see materials and replacement costs. So this is per segment. This assumes today's dollars, no inflation. It's a very simplistic representation of what it would cost. It would cost you $8 million a year for the next 5 years to replace asbestos cement water main, another $6.5 million to replace the cast iron. So if you're currently spending about $750,000 or $800,000, I think, for cast iron water main replacement in 2015, you're about 35 years to 40 years in terms of getting rid of the cast iron. So what else can we do?
Mr. Watt, before you continue, how much longer do you think you'll be? Do you need another 5 minutes?
5 minutes, max.
Councillor Passero? Second. Councillor Butler, all those in favour? Thank you.
Thank you. So this is a fairly detailed analysis of your break record. We've filtered certain breaks out, some anomalous breaks. So essentially, on the left-hand side, you have the total number of breaks. So you have 208 pipes in your system that have broken once. Of those, you have 84 that have broken twice. Of those, you have 40, so they're deductive. So you have very few water mains that have broken more than four or five times. But what is of concern is that the system is starting to deteriorate at an accelerated rate. The rate of replacement, how much you could spend, is really rooted in the customer's tolerance for service outages. Customers generally don't tolerate out-service outages greater than 6 hours. And the reason for that is there's 3 points in the day at which people typically use water. One is breakfast, one is lunch, one is dinner. If you're more than 6 hours in that quarter, provided it doesn't happen at night, you're starting to inconvenience people, and they're generally intolerant of those. Majority of your breaks are on 6-inch or 150-millimeter pipes and smaller, so they're relatively low risk. There's not high consequences of their failure. You got to factor in the needs of other infrastructure and the ongoing monitoring of key performance indicators. But ultimately, the rate at which you spend is a decision of council in view of what the customer will tolerate. This graph is some fairly complex analysis. I guess it doesn't come across too well on the projector. So what the graph shows is the gray line. I guess I can't point with a mouse here. I can. But currently, you're at about 45 breaks per year. So what we've done is taken the assumption that the trend that you've got, which is a 10-year trend, we applied it to all pipes in the system, save and except PVC. So what the model does is it takes $750,000, $800,000, applies it to the pipes, replaces them with PVC, goes into year two, whatever it didn't spend that year, it applies again. Low probability of PVC failing, and it goes year by year. But it deteriorates each pipe year by year. So essentially, the money shot here, and I guess we could have a more detailed discussion about this at another point in time, is if you want to maintain the existing level of service around 45 breaks, you need to spend about an additional $200,000 per year on replacement. The bump that you see in subsequent years is primarily due to AC water main failure, because that will become an issue. So outcomes and recommendations, the rate of replacement with respect to cast iron and AC for that matter needs to match the rate of deterioration in the system. There was a caveat with the last graph, there's a 10-year sample period there. We're going to give your staff a bunch of tools where they can input information. This is a living plan, so they can regenerate these statistics. More information, the more certainty there'll be in the model. Again, the customer's ability or tolerability to pay. There's as you replace water mains, hopefully your non-revenue water goes down. The impact of non-revenue water on your sanitary sewer, your II program, your capacity, you just can't throw money at Mr. Walsh and the engineering group. They've got a finite capacity on how much they can put out the door, because they're four or five individuals. You can consider other interventions. They do this in the UK quite a lot, is they increase maintenance dollars so they can respond to water main breaks quicker. To decrease the service outage time, that's one of their KPIs. And you can look at remediation on the top right-hand corner. You've got a lined water main before and after. That's a fraction of the cost of open cut to be applied selectively. We think you should consider a tolerable increase to capital, utility rates 2 to 5% annually to make up for some of the shortfall. Leverage provincial funding, obviously stating the obvious. But your funding should align with KPIs. We have put some there. Number of outages. Every year you should get staff are probably going to stare me down here. Every year you should be getting a report card of sorts on the water system. How many outages did I have greater than 6 hours? Fire flow deficiencies? What's my non-revenue water? And compare that against what you spent last year on the system. So next steps, we're going to finalize the draft master plan update document. We're going to give Fortieri staff some training on tools. My understanding is you've got a report in front of you to authorize the retention of us to do your wastewater master plan. We'd integrate the results of this plan with the suggested replacements for the wastewater master plan. So sorry for being over time, but there was a lot of information to cover, and thanks for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Watt and Mr. Bell. So you had a minute to spare on your extension. I'm sure that there are a number of questions, and I'll...
Thank you, Your Worship. Your slide last page actually answered one of my questions, which was, has the report been finalized?
We sat with your staff prior to this meeting with report markups, and it should be finalized within the next 2 weeks.
Okay, I noticed that on slide 12, you had listed out the population roughly around between 27,000 and 28,000. The population statistics come out showing that the population's over 30,000. And I'm sure that Mr. Brady will agree with this, we've experienced higher than average growth in our area. So how have your algorithms compensated for that, or have you gone back and adjusted those to reflect that the last 2 years have been record years for Fort Erie? You said this report took 8 months, so I'm assuming you started it much before then. So can you just speak to that?
Yeah, through you, the mayor. So I should clarify that those numbers there are actually the service population. So there is still a substantial portion of the town which is not serviced off the water system. The information that we have in there is based off of the provincial places to grow planning numbers. So that's the allocation that has been allocated to the town of Fort Erie within the region of Niagara. And in the context of the region, the town has actually received some of the more aggressive growth numbers within all regions. So that has been accounted for as best we can. Again, with all these master plans, it's a planning process. So we are doing our best guess based on the best available information. There's still a recommendation to review this process on a 5 to 10 year cycle to account for those changes.
Thank you. And my one last question, and it may pertain more to wastewater, but as you just hit the nail on the head, we have a large segment of the population that isn't on water that isn't accounted for in this. And talking about just service now, I know that the town has to do a fair number of inspections to identify potential infiltration from illegal hookups, et cetera. Did you take that into consideration when you were putting these numbers together? Because that would show as non-revenue water loss as well. So
again, through you, the mayor. So the baseline demands that are within the system, which do account for the existing population and these other potential connections, were calibrated to actual billing records and production records, so that the system capacity analysis of the existing system does account for all of those demands, and they were accounted for in different ways and are clearly identified, so that it is accounted for.
Okay, thank you. The last one I had, and just for those that are listening at home and don't have the opportunity to see the map, on slide 14 you had identified areas with stars that would indicate insufficient water pressure for fire suppression. As it stands now, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, we currently meet the standards in all those areas, but based on the projected numbers and the growth, you're saying that these areas potentially could become hotspots. Is that correct?
Through you, the mayor. So some of these are existing, and some of them are driven by growth, but we just need to be very aware that these are stated objectives that we're trying to achieve. So we're, as the town, you've set a level of fire flow objectives that you're trying to achieve that are quite aggressive fire flow objectives. In terms of is there fire flow at every single one of these locations? Wherever there is a hydrant, there is capacity. There is some form of capacity to fight fire. It's just that at some of these identified locations, we're not able to meet the highest objective target that we are trying to achieve. And what that means is it's simply a matter of if we can work with the fire department and identify where these areas, we're not meeting 100% of the objective, but we're meeting something in between 50 or 100, as long as the fire department is aware of them, they have a number of measures that they can do to manage that. And it's really just a way to identify areas so that the fire department can come up with an appropriate.
Thank you. Councillor Passero and then Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Worship. You mentioned the 40% figure for the non-revenue water as being high. Do you have a comparable average, Niagara, and then maybe provincially, as to where we compare to our neighbours?
For you, Mr. Mayor, we have, within the report, we have a table that compares infrastructure leak indexes for Niagara area municipalities and another table that does it maybe on a broader scale. And the last assessment that was region-wide, Niagara region-wide, was around 2010, I believe, and it's within the report, so it'll be there for your consumption.
Thank you for that. I give you credit, given the dryness of the subject matter. You managed to do a presentation that was informative, relevant, and I think as easy as possible to understand given the nature of what we're dealing with. So congratulations to you both, and thank you for your hard work on this presentation and report.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I agree with Councillor Passero. That is probably one of the best presentations that I've seen, so thank you, and I'm going to look forward to the workshops once you put them on. I liked all of the questions that Councillor Nutt had asked you. They're very good questions, but on page 23, if you could turn to that slide, when you were going through the numbers that it would cost us to do it all at once versus, you know, pacing ourselves. You mentioned two types of distribution systems. One was asbestos cement. It's the first time I've ever heard that terminology, and quite frankly, it kind of scared me, versus the cast iron. So I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit about that. And I know that we have great drinking water. I'm not afraid at all, but when you mix asbestos into it, what do you mean by that?
So through you, Your Worship, it's a fibrous pipe that's reinforced with cement, essentially, so it's not, it's a bit like fiberglass with resin, but there's no immediate risk nor future risk to the public at large by AC water main. Does that make sense?
Sorry, it does make sense. I just wonder, are those pipes, are you looking to replace them, and how quickly are you looking to replace them in this master plan?
So through you, Your Worship, what we did start to notice in the 10-year trend was the start of elevated break rates for these pipes, and I think operations group is starting to see this, and this may be part of the issue with respect to non-revenue water or system leakage as well. So the reason they're highlighted in red, and maybe I wasn't explicit in that regard, is because those are two pipe types of concern that are sort of top of mind for us and your staff.
Thank you.
Anything further, Councillor Butler? Anyone else? Councillor Lubberts and then Councillor Zanko.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. On slide 20, can you just get a little breakdown? I'm looking at the middle row there and the middle slide, the technical level of service. And then it's got six breaks per kilometer per year. Are we striving to get to that point, or are we striving not to want that? But that seems to be a lot to me.
So through Your Worship, this is just illustrative. We have developed some levels of service and technical levels of service with 40-year engineering staff and maintenance staff. they're just not finalized in time in terms of this presentation. So this was illustrative. This is actually from another municipality. So to forgive me for that. In terms of the analysis we presented, the level of service is 45 breaks. To maintain 45 breaks per year, it's a minimum of additional $200,000 in investment. So sorry, this was illustrative in nature only. But we will come back prior to finalization of the document and go over the technical levels of service with council.
Okay, thank you very much. And if I might, on slide 14, looking at the in the legend on the side, it's got maximum day demand, minimum pressure. There's a 40 PSI. Now, I'm going to assume the 40 PSI are these the pipes in the road, the pink lines. You show it as purple lines, or are they pink areas? The pink dotted areas, you want 40 PSI. And then there's only 90 to 100 PSI in this green area here.
I guess through the mayor, to clarify, is really what this map is trying to show is all the areas which were outside or not meeting the level of service objectives. So with respect to the pressure, so that's the pressure within the water system. And within the water system, we're trying to achieve a minimum pressure so that we've got enough capacity in the system that we can turn on the tap and we get good water flow, but not so high that when we use the wheel, we'll have fixtures break or pop or wear out faster. The red areas, which when looking at the map, it's difficult to see in the legend because there's only one real small dot, which the arrow is pointing to,
yeah,
where we are actually seeing pressures below the 40 PSI targets. And then there's one area, this larger area here, where the system pressures are exceeding 90 PSI. The rest of the system is in that sweet spot between 40 and 90, where it's operating within the desired pressure objectives.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
The purple lines in this figure are there to indicate what is the regional transmission system versus the blue pipes, which are your distribution system. And then there's some light blue ones, which represent larger private water systems that are connected to your network. And then it's all the individual stars, the black and pink stars, which indicate areas where the fire flow available at those individual hydrants are below the desired flow objective.
Okay, thank you. And then one last question on slide 14. Just a little more breakdown on the cost.
Slide 16?
This is going to 70 kilometers of pipe. Now, did we break this down to just certain types of pipe with cast iron, or is this what we're looking at, or all pipe?
So through you, the mayor, again, this is the set of capital programs, which is the cost to replace, this is effectively all the cast iron water mains.
This is just cast iron?
This is just cast iron, as well as any upgrades to the system to address effectively all the stars on this map on slide 14. And these here are the full replacement costs or project costs, assuming that these works would be done as their own individual projects. So this includes engineering, design, road restoration, et cetera, so that's why the total cast iron water main cost comes out a little bit higher than in this slide here, where this is really just looking at the state of grid repair replacement costs. And so that's the cost of doing the water main works, which are usually aligned with other road works, sewer and road. So that this does not include those additional uplift restoration costs as in the previous slide.
But when I'm looking at slide three, or area three here on this, I got 18.5 kilometers.
Yes.
And it's a total of 13,200,000. But because it's three, it's a low priority. Is it?
It's
in a state of good repair, so we're not really looking at it, but it needs to be done, and it's $13 million, right?
Through you, the mayor, the priorities one, two, and three are all ones that address hydraulic deficiencies. So these are all projects to address deficiencies identified on slide 14. So that does include the 18.5 kilometers or the $13 million equivalency. It's just that priority ones are projects that have already been committed over the next 2 years. Priority two are all the ones that are on pipes that have a poor performance history in terms of lots of breaks. And then these priority threes are all the rest of the water mains that need to be upgraded, or in this case, cast iron water mains that need to be replaced with PVC. Because one benefit that we haven't highlighted is cast iron water mains, because of their nature, are relatively rough in the interior, whereas PVC is relatively smooth. So you can replace a cast iron water main with a PVC water main of the same diameter and actually get a substantial increase in performance. So a vast majority of these 18.5 kilometers are actually just replacing your local cast iron water main, which provides you enough capacity to take all those deficiencies, which are 20% below your level of service objective, replace it with a PVC water main, and now you're meeting your objective. There's very little actual new water mains. I think there's only two new segments of water main that need to be installed, and still a very limited amount of upsizing of additional water mains.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Zanko.
Thank you very much, Your Worship. Thank you very much, Mr. Bell and Mr. Watt. I agree with Councillor Becerro. The presentation was very informative. I just have one question that hasn't been asked. On page 27, you mentioned the recommendations and how we provide a solution to the issue, which I'm always drawn to. One of the areas you mentioned is for Council to consider a 2 to 5% annual increase to get us to where we need to be. And this council has been very, very committed to infrastructure and increasing our infrastructure allocation. It's such a slippery slope, obviously. The taxpayer cannot tolerate such a significant increase in most cases. But what I'm wondering, my question is, when you came up with a 2 to 5% annual increase, were you comparing other municipalities in reference to what they contribute, or were you just specifically looking at our area of need and replacement requirements?
Through Your Worship, this is typically, we work in a lot of communities in Peel, York, Niagara Falls, Niagara region. This typically, customer tolerability to pay is around 2 to 5%. Generally, that's the increases that we see. That's notwithstanding, we could come back with a huge ask that would get the rate of replacement far higher. But generally, we see 2 to 5% added to utility rates annually. That's where that number came from. The $200,000 number is not really to be argued. It's how you get there. So basically, we're saying we've got a very large work program, and how aggressive you are at it is indexed to the customer experience.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
It answers my question that in Peel and York area that they can tolerate a 2% or 5% increase. I'm not sure about Fort Erie, but yes, it did answer my question. Thank you.
Wasn't the answer you were hoping for. I'll go back to Councillor Lubitz, and then I've got a number of questions if there aren't any others. Councillor Lubitz?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just to follow up on what Councillor Zanka was asking, when you were doing your report, we've implemented in the town of Fort Erie infrastructure gap funding. About $500,000 a year is our target. Was that brought into play when you were doing your report? Because just following up on what Councillor Zanka was saying, if that's like a 2% annual increase, was that played into it all?
Well, there's a distinction. That's a levy. That's a levy-based amount. These come from the rates, and as you know, the systems are separate. So you wouldn't have taken that into account, I presume.
Your Worship, we just look at utility rate funding because we can't borrow from the from the general tax rate to fund a utility.
Well, how does that work? Well, I guess we can look at that.
So
infrastructure, we're replacing water mains. That's all coming out of our...
That has to come out of the rates.
The rates?
Right. So the $500,000, we're utilizing storm sewers. I had some questions, if you don't mind. And when you started off, I thought you said that the asset management plan that we received last year may have overstated our needs. I thought you said that, and I was feeling quite comfortable. And then by the time you got to the end, it sounded to me like we've got some pretty significant needs. So maybe they were overstated, but they're still large.
You are correct, Your Worship. They were maybe overstated. They weren't overstated. They were consistent with the analysis method that they used. One of the issues, to be frank, is some of the installation dates with some of the information we've got, there were some assumptions made on that with respect to cast iron, ductile iron, what have you. So they may have impacted that analysis. We've since smoothed that stuff out. But is it still a bad news story? Yes, it is.
So easy for you to say, and when you talk about a 2-5% annual rate, a levy increase, I'm sure that there aren't too many smiling residents either. You probably don't know, but several years ago, the region of Niagara was going to embark upon an annual increase of 6%, I believe, for water and 2-3% for sewer, and that was going to go on forever. We can imagine that it didn't go on forever simply because there is a level of tolerance. So that's a good point, but I would hesitate to suggest that 2-5% annually is sustainable. However, can I get back to my questions? When you were talking about the objectives on slide seven, you mentioned the 100-year capital plan. And is that a provincial guideline? Is that what the province is look at 100-year horizon?
Your Worship, I believe today at the Ontario Good Roads Association, the new provincial requirements with respect to asset management plans or long-term plans are being announced. So I think they're bringing condition into it, much like we've done here, and risk. To answer that question, that was a deliverable as stated by your staff for this project.
Right.
We think much beyond 40 or 50 years is somewhat navel-gazing.
Well, I that's what I was wondering, and so it's nice to have 100 years, but there's just so many variables that could arise. So the other thing that I wanted to try to get some clarification on was map. And the first map I think you've got is on page 7, slide 9, but maybe slide 11 is better because it's a full page. So the purple are the regional trunk mains.
Correct.
And so that northerly trunk main that goes east to west, I can't see the name of the road, but is that College? Eagle Street. So it runs through mostly outside the urban boundary, and I believe that you indicated in your earlier in this presentation that there's 14 kilometers of regional trunk main. That seems awfully low.
I guess, Your Mayor, looking at the map and the numbers here, I I would agree with you that the 14 number does look a little strange, and that we'll double check that number in the final report. I guess this is more to illustrate that the region network does represent just a small proportion of the total network, and that the vast majority of the system that was in local distribution.
Right. If that 14 kilometers is wrong, would that affect the 267 allocated to the town, or is that the same regardless?
It might adjust it slightly as well.
Then I had a question. And this report with respect to improvements or the need to that relates only to the town of Fort Erie infrastructure.
That's correct. Because if you look on slide 11, this highlights the regional plan for their upgrades to the Fort Erie water system.
Right. And I believe that at one point you stated that region has embarked upon upgrades of its system, and that will, I thought you maybe said that would reduce some of the requirements for the municipality. How does that work?
So just in broad strokes, there's a number of operational quirks with the town of Fort Erie system on the regional side. So they've got a number of different facilities that effectively compete with each other, and that their overall plan is to consolidate all those facilities into a single elevated tank, probably to be more centrally located within the overall system.
Be a rationalization of the system.
And by placing that tank where it is, it's going to help regulate pressures within the system and really provide additional capacity from the treatment plant, because there's going to be more storage in the system, so that when there's big demands on the system, it's going to be able to draw longer from that tank and be able to pump out as well at the same time, so it adds additional capacity overall system. And so what that means, there's a little bit extra power or a little bit extra juice in the regional system, so that when you get down to the end of your distribution system, you don't have to make up as much capacity to achieve this.
And that central location, that I presume also takes into account things like land elevations and what have you. I mean, if you're going from the lake, you're going uphill all the way to there, and then I suppose from there you may be going downhill.
Yes, so Fort Erie operates as a single pressure zone, so it's quite a large elevation gain, but because the elevation gain is a lot less than most typical water systems, it's operating all in one pressure zone. So the entire system is trying to achieve effectively the same imaginary water line in the air. So wherever we put the tank, it's just a matter of how tall it's going to be relative to the ground. If we put it on the top of the hill, it's going to be shorter. If we put it a little bit lower on the hill, you're just going to have a taller column supporting that water tank.
And then just to talk about the water flows, just to be clear, the area that you have concern about is, again, it looks like it's outside the urban boundary, and it's probably, I'm saying it's near Cherry Hill Golf Course. Is that where that is?
Are you referencing the green area?
The red area.
Oh, the red area, yeah. So that's
south of Highway 3 outside of Ridgeway.
Yeah, so that consists of the highest point in the service area, and it's outside the urban boundary. And it's fed off of a small diameter water main. So right now, that area is primarily, so this is a performance without all the upgrades, and that deficiency is primarily the result of the region's water system facilities fighting with each other a little bit, which is causing some larger than typical pressure fluctuations within the system. Once the new tank comes on board and really regulates those pressure fluctuations to a much narrower band, it it may be sufficient to eliminate that low pressure pocket there. And again, this is under a max day scenario. So this is the planning scenario, which is the highest demand day. Under typical operations, this is not seen. So this is something we'd seen in the future on the worst day of the year. Kind of.
Doesn't it, just to reiterate, there doesn't appear to be any problems within any of the urban areas within the municipality in terms of flow, is there?
In terms of pressure, you are correct.
Okay.
There's some fire flows which are highlighted here, but those are all going to be addressed through the program that is proposed. There are a number of water quality, potential water quality issues, but those are already all known generally by the town's operation staff. And there's a number of existing operation measures that are already in place and will continue to be in place to address those.
Thank you. And I wonder if I could just speak to you a little bit about the non-revenue water. Mr. Boutin can start to cringe now. Are there any, aside from the system, are there any external factors that would, why Fort Erie would have such a high rate of non-revenue water?
The non-revenue water is, a good portion is probably driven by just the age of the water system or the components of the age of the water system. On average, because you're operating under a single pressure zone, there are some areas that are operating typically towards the higher end of the acceptable pressure range, which may lead to high water loss, but there are also lots of examples of systems that are operating in high pressures which don't have high water loss. So I'd say that it's very difficult to identify beyond the age of some of the infrastructure.
Is there any way to determine whether water is lost through the sunk mains?
I mean, so this leak detection program here is really a plan, focus plan, to try to identify leaks within the system. And this is a bit of an overview plan, but you can, in the details, it really isolates the town system from the regional system to really try to identify total accounting of losses to see what portion is effectively on the town's distribution system versus the regional transmission system. So this plan, this proposal here, will help to hopefully identify some of those issues.
Are those zone meters that we're looking at?
Yes. So this is effectively a plan for how to segregate the system into areas where we can do a more detailed mass balance accounting of water demands versus supplied to be able to really identify where are there high leakage areas. Try to get a better handle on the non-revenue water.
Essentially, this is the discretization of the cutting up of the system. You have one large meter that feeds into that area, or several. Excuse me. Those meter readings are then compared against domestic meters, and the difference tells us how to categorize areas with respect to remedial works. What's leakier? So out of this, you'll have a sorted list, 1 through 11, of what your leakier areas are.
By that, I don't know that it answered my question, and I'm not, maybe I wasn't listening. Is it possible for water to be lost from a regional water trunk main?
Yes, most definitely.
So with this scheme that we've got here, the zone metering map with all the zone meters, would that help inform us as to what, A, whether there is loss, and B, if so, assist us in any form to quantify
it? Yes.
And the other question, sorry, Grant, but how do we know if the meters at the regional water treatment plant are accurate?
So the only way that can be done is through regular calibration and inspection of those water meters. And so as part of the master the regional master plan, one of the recommendations out of there is a recommendation for an appropriate large water meter inspection calibration program to ensure that we don't have large discrepancies between production meter and what's actually being supplied.
That's a recommendation you're making to the region?
That's a recommendation that will be made to the region as part of the regional master servicing plan.
And at this stage of the game, do we know whether the meter or meters at the Rose Hill treatment plant are accurate?
Tell you definitively tonight whether they're accurate at this point in time? No, we can't.
Well, are they tested? I mean, are they regularly calibrated?
My understanding would be that production meters or billing meters are held to a higher level of regard with respect to calibration. Have we seen the calibration documentation?
Okay.
No.
Yeah, and I don't know that, and Mr. Boutin probably has a better understanding of that than in any event, that's an issue that's going to be addressed so that my conspiratorial suspicions will be addressed. May have had one or I think I'm good. Thank you very much. But I know Councillor Nutt had a question.
Yes, just one last question to follow up the mayor's concern. We are curious to know if the schoolyard bully is stealing our lunch money. The other thing is that you had addressed in your report that if you could go to slide 11, what looks to be right off Eagle Street, which would be the reservoir that exists behind the fire hall and the out-of-service gas station there. The region had announced plans to increase the reservoir capacity. Now you're telling us that they're taking it offline. Is that accurate?
Through you, the mayor, that is correct. As part of the new master servicing plan, there has been a substantial change in the growth allocations to the town of Fort Erie. From the previous master plan to this one, there's been a substantial growth, which in combination with the new objective towards overall system optimization really made that upgrade no longer fit in line with what the long-term strategy needs of the town were. And so the plan has been to defer or rearrange previously identified capital works to the upgrades to the Smithville Reservoir and Pump Station and restoration works to the Central Avenue tank, and to transfer those funds towards the construction of a new centralized elevated tank and then to decommission those.
Do you happen to know where the location is going to go with the new tank?
Through you, the mayor, the location of the new tank is still being finalized, but the plan is expected to be near the Bowen Road and QEW interchange.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure that out. The map's really small, hard to see, so I didn't want to guess on it, but thank you.
Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just to follow up on some of the things that the mayor was talking about, I'm just comparing slide 11 and slide 14. And I'm just kind of using my logic, and I know that when you have water pressure in one point, the further you get away, the lower the pressure is. So when you get to near the end of the line, the pressure is going to be the lowest. And when I'm looking at this new elevated tank on slide 11, and if I go to slide 14, the new elevated tank is right in the area where we already have a 90 to 100 PSI. Now, why wouldn't we put it in the lower, in the pink area or the red area where we have the lowest, and then distribute it out from there?
Through you, the mayor. So that is an interesting observation, and it is true as you move further away from the source, you do lose pressure, lose energy in the system. Though within large water distribution systems like this, a large portion of the pressure that you're seeing is actually a function of how high or low on the elevation you are relative to the target level. So if the whole entire system is trying to achieve is effectively imaginary water line in the air. So if you were to look into the pipe and the pressure and have a jet of water straight up in the air, you'd have this target hydraulic raid line. And the further you are up on the hill, the lower your pressure is, as opposed to the further you are down on the hill, that you'll have a higher pressure. So it's not necessarily the distance from the source, because the source of the entire system is the Rose Hill Water Treatment Plant, and the pressures from there aren't exceeding the 90. With respect to this figure here demonstrated, this is the performance of the system in the future without any of the upgrades. So this is without the tank, this is without the water system upgrades. And that pressure spike that you're seeing there is actually the function of the Smithville pump station turning on and having to overcome system pressures to push water out of the reservoir. And so today, whenever that pump station turns on, it causes a pressure spike, and that's what that green area is showing. I must apologize, I didn't include a map of this is how the system is going to perform with all of the upgrades in place. And with that map, really a lot of these green and red areas and all these stars no longer show. Oh, sorry, and then it's probably to highlight is another rationale for the location of the new elevated tank is it's adjacent to the proposed Canadian Motor Speedways, which in terms of flow and capacity would be your highest system demand and your highest fire flow criteria with the entire network. And by placing the tank adjacent to it, you really eliminate the need for any significant trunk or local water main upgrades to accommodate that growth. And it's just a matter of ensuring the service connection from the regional trunk and storage tank that are right there to the actual property.
Councilor Lieberts. Thank you very much, Mr. Watt and Mr. Bell. You've tired us out. You've asked all the questions that we want, and we look forward to the final report. And I know that there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm sure that our staff and this council will ask, so thank you.
Thank you.
That then takes us to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items that they wish removed from the consent agenda? If not, then Councillor Nutt, you have the resolution to approve the council consent agenda items.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zenko, that Council approves the consent agenda items as recommended.
Are there any questions or comments? I just wanted to say that with respect to correspondence item A with respect to the Niagara Parks Commission, I know that some of the contents of the letter were somewhat offensive to Niagara Parks Commission, but the resolution itself, which is in bold, I think is I think that speaks appropriately to the need to have local representation on the Niagara Parks Commission, certainly with the skills that have been identified. So I support the resolution, not so much the rationale that was explained. Just thought I'd get that out there. If there are no other questions or comments, then I'll call the question. Councillor Passero.
Yes, Your Worship. I apologize for being slow there. Just a comment regarding the SPCA board minutes. We don't see them on a very regular basis, or at least I don't pull them out on a very regular basis, but I just wanted to mention I had the opportunity as I was there for another matter to take a quick tour of the facility, and I'm amazed at what they have done over the last couple of years, and I would encourage my colleagues on council to call Wendy and take a little tour of the place, because it really is quite impressive what they've been able to do. And I was amazed with where they're putting their dollars, and really they've transformed almost every room. So if you have the opportunity, take a look.
They've had some very good support from the community. They've been able to tap into some grants that have been available, and they've done an excellent job. You're quite correct. If there aren't any other questions or comments, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That is carried. So that takes us to new business. And Ms. Babenko, we've got a number of appointments to make, and some of them are without the need for voting. Some of them are for voting. So the first one that we have has to do with the Accessibility Advisory Committee. That's one where we have had two applications. So what I'd like us to do is give you our ballots after we voted on them and hand them to you, and then you can tabulate them and give us advice as to which names.
That's correct, Your Worship.
Okay, so why don't we just take a moment right now and do that for all three of the ballots, and we'll hand those to the clerk. Have the results. So, Councillor Passero, you have the next resolution relative to the Accessibility Advisory Committee.
Yes, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council appoints Bev Ferris to the Accessibility Advisory Committee for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Councillor Lubert, you have the next resolution.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redicott. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Butler that Council appoints Sharon Robinson to the Communities in Bloom Committee for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Councillor Passero, you have the next resolution.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council appoints John Mullicone to the Community Gaming Development Corporation Board for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Councillor Butler?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Luberts, that Council appoints Nicholas Dubinel to the Fort Erie Public Library Board for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. And Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, that Council appoints Stacey Weeks to the Mayor's Youth Advisory Committee for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. And then back to you, Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, that Council appoints Carol Walpole to the Museum and Cultural Heritage Advisory Committee for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Then Councillor Passero, you again.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, that Council appoints Margaret Rodway, Dandelion, and Fran Hill, Fort Erie Native Friendship Center Senior, to the Senior Citizens Advisory Committee for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Does anyone have any questions with respect to new business item H, which is the memorandum from Jeremy Korovar? Any inquiries or matters of new business from members of council? We'll start with Councillor Zanko and then Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Walsh, I'm just wondering if perhaps he can provide residents watching this evening an understanding of what's going on regarding pothole filling. Over the weekend, I've received a number of complaints regarding the massive amount of potholes throughout Ward 3. And specifically, they are wondering why there continues to be so many given the light winter that we have. Mr. Walsh did kind of explain last week what happens during flash freezing, and I was just hoping that perhaps he can provide residents a little bit of a background and maybe where we are at the filling as well.
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. It has been, even though we haven't had much snow this winter, it has been difficult on our roads. The frequent thawing and freezing of the road bases creates a perfect environment for pothole development, and I think that's why we're seeing maybe more than we typically see. The pothole season has spread out this year in terms of length rather than a concentrated time frame at the first thaw in spring. We are addressing our potholes, I think, on a priority basis, biggest first. One of the things I would like to add to council is we're trying an experimental patching material. It's a little more money than what we usually use for our pothole patching, but it's supposed to be a permanent fix until the road can get fixed in a better way. So we'll be monitoring that over the next couple of years and see if it pays off in terms of lower maintenance.
Councilor Zanko?
Thank you. Through you to Mr. Walsh. So have we been using the new pothole mix this season, or only on certain potholes, or across the board?
For you again, Mr. Mayor, it's been on certain potholes where, because of the expense of the material, we've only been able to get 3 truckloads of it. We are using the material on busier roads and potholes that appear frequently, repeat pothole offenders, if you will. So it's a very focused area. It's, as I said, it's more money than our usual material, our QPR, as it's called. And in fact, it's about 3 times the amount, which is why we're using it on a test basis.
Interesting. Oh, thank you.
Councilor Pizzurro.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Walsh, the asbestos concrete pipe was mentioned in the delegation tonight, and as Councillor Butler mentioned, anytime asbestos is mentioned, red flags are raised. I'm wondering if you could expand on the answers given from the delegates on 2 counts. Is that, first of all, is that asbestos concrete, is that more commonly known as what we've heard in the past as transite pipe? And then secondly, if you could just explain for anybody who may be listening or concerned when the challenges are posed, and my understanding is it's more having to do when it's removed versus when it's actually operating in the system. But if you could expand on that just so everybody is clear and we don't have any phone calls tomorrow.
Mr. Walton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As Councillor Pizzurro correctly points out, another AKA for asbestos cement water main is transite. It's colloquially known as AC pipe, asbestos cement. And again, as he correctly points out, the only issue to deal with on AC is when it's cut. That's when potential asbestos fibers are released into the environment. We do have a strict protocol for handling of AC pipe. It exists both in our water system and our sewer system. We take the greatest precautions in terms of material handling, both through the cutting of the pipe and the eventual disposal of it.
Gerald?
Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Any other inquiries, Councillor Nutt?
Thank you very much, Your Worship. Through yourself to Councillor Zanko, I'd like to make a request that if you could ask or bring to the Traffic Advisory Committee the request for a traffic study west of Ridgemount Road on Town Line Road leading up to the QEW. There's a high volume of traffic there. The Ministry of Transportation has replaced the overpass, but the road has a severe number of potholes and is also highly traversed by vehicles, especially from Niagara Christian College. So I just kind of want to know, because when I was down there today, I observed several cars that were appeared to be exceeding the speed limit. Not that I could say for sure standing by the road, but they were passing me awfully quick.
Your section again. Mr. Walsh, you're taking this down?
Yes, I gave Mr. Walsh the heads up earlier. I just want to make a formal request to Councillor Zanko to bring it to the committee to see if they could get it on their schedule.
Sure she will. And again, the intersection?
Ridgemount Road and Town Line Road, heading west towards the QEW.
Got that, Councillor Zanko?
Yes, and I'm wondering, I do see Mr. Walsh make note. I also have another matter that needs to be added to the agenda. So, Mr. Walsh, just through you, Your Worship, to Mr. Walsh, I know we have an upcoming meeting this Wednesday, and given the fact of how infrequent we meet, hopefully these items will still be able to be added to the agenda.
Sure they can be. Mr. Walsh?
Yes, that's confirmed.
Thank you.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Last week, I met with Signe and the Kinnett from Stevensville, and we were speaking about the watering contract for the flowers in both the Ridgeway area and the Stevensville area. And one of the questions that was raised was, is there a possibility to source out or to have a report drafted that would be able to tell us whether or not we can run lines through the ground system up the poles and into the flower baskets for watering rather than to have a watering contract?
Mr. Walsh, just off the top of your head, we're talking about, Councillor Butler, you're talking about running laterals off of the water line for each pole?
So just like the greenhouses, and I know that Plantation does something like that, and I'm sure that there are other companies that do that, but it's just a system that would run up the pole and water.
Right, so they'd have to tap into the
something
at some point. Mr. Walsh, initial thoughts?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, initial thoughts, it's very expensive and hard to do. The time to install the water lines would have been during the reconstruction.
That takes care of Ridgeway.
What about Jarvis Street, and then is Crystal Beach is going to be going through some rentals as well eventually? So maybe we can look at those two areas, and is Stevensville slated for any?
For you, Mr. Mayor, I don't believe there's any improvements planned for Stevensville. The other two BIAs, Jarvis was recently reconstructed 10 years ago, 15 years ago or so. Again, not an ideal candidate, and I'm not sure what the plans are for Crystal Beach, but certainly we can look into those plans when design is underway.
I think it would be helpful, Mr. Walsh, just I don't think we need a report, but I'm not sure I think the logistics of the issue are greater than some people may contemplate. Maybe you could just provide us with a paragraph about what the logistical issues are relative to the tested mode of watering plants.
I can send out an email to council on that.
Yeah, I think that would be
commentary on non-revenue water as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you should just deal with the question that Councillor Butler raised. We can get to the non-water revenue implications if it goes any further. Was there anything further, Councillor Butler? Okay, any other councillors? If not, then that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Walsh, the bridge on Stevensville Road that runs over Black Creek near the empty lot between Memory Park and May's Restaurant, is that the responsibility of the region or is that a town bridge?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that's a regional road or a regional bridge.
We make a request because I noticed that the east side of it, the concrete, is breaking away. I walk my dog down there all the time. And
I think we can bring that to the attention of
can
of
you
the region.
Please pass that along?
I can. Through you, Mr. Mayor, I believe the rehabilitation of that bridge is in their short-term capital program.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. If that is the case, maybe when you raise that with the region, they'll probably tell you that. Maybe you could just pass that on to Councillor Nutt. There are no other inquiries, then we'll move to motions. There are no motions. Are there any notices of motion? There being none, that takes us to consideration of bylaws. Does anyone wish any of the bylaws removed from the package? If not, then Councillor Butler, you have a resolution for...
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Luberts, that the bylaw package containing 24-2017 to amend bylaw number 182-07 to change the composition of the Ridgeway Business Improvement Area Board of Management, 25-2017 to amend zoning bylaw number 129-90-4099 Niagara River Parkway, George Baboris, agent, and Lori Lint Baboris, owner, 26-2017 to stop up and close and authorize the sale of part of Gilmore Road unopened road allowance on the west side of Farm Road, Joseph and Cynthia Ann DeFilippis, 27-2017 to authorize the entry into a grant funding agreement with Dr. Peter Sarenchuk for reimbursement of relocation expenses. 28-2017 to repeal bylaw number 100-99, performance evaluation procedure for the position of Chief Administrative Officer, and 29-2017 to authorize the entry into and execution of an agreement with Her Majesty the Queen in right of Ontario as represented by the Minister of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs under the Ontario Infrastructure Top-Up Fund Application-Based Component. Is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? None opposed. That is carried. The bylaw package is on the floor for questions or comments. Councillor Nutt and then Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just in regards to 27-2917, which is the grant funding for the doctor, I'd like to thank and recognize Russ Wilson for his continued dedication on recruiting physicians to the community.
Thank you. Councillor Passero.
Yes, Your Worship. Also on 27-2017, I know an email was sent today, and I'm just wondering if we had any response about what practicing part-time family medicine means.
We did.
The constitution of this agreement.
Yes, we did. So apparently the custom is that it's between 3 and 4.5 days per week. It's not included in the agreement with physicians that come in. It's not defined. But after further conversation with Mr. Lustig and Mr. Wilson, that will be referred to in future agreements so that at least there's some target for the municipality in terms of what can be expected. But I'm advised that it's 3 to 4.5 days per week, and Dr. Sarenchuk apparently has been working 3 days per week, starting as of January the 17th.
Excellent. I appreciate that information. So it is desirable then to go that route versus a patient caseload and setting a number or anything like that, because...
I think it's more efficacious simply because the physician is here, and it's hard to say when people will show up. It's worked in the past, and apparently it's working now.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments? Being none, Councillor Luberts, you have the resolution for third and final reading.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redicott. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Butler that bylaws number 24-2017, 25-2017, 26-2017, 27-2017, 28-2017, 2117. That should be 2017, right?
It should be 2017.
Yes, and 29-2017 are given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and the clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed. That is carried. And you've made the change to the date in that one bylaw, Councillor Luberts?
Yes.
Thank you. You have the next resolution, which is first and second reading for the confirmatory bylaw.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redicott. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Butler, the bylaw number 30-2017 to confirm the actions of Council at its meeting held on February 27, 2017 is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Sir Zanko, you have the third and final reading for that resolution.
Yes, thank you. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Passero, that bylaw number 30-2017 is given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That takes us to scheduling of meetings. Councillor Zanko, Councillor Nutt, Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. We have a traffic coordinating committee meeting March 1st at noon here at the Town Hall in Conference Room 3. We also have a strategic business committee meeting under strong customer service, relationships, and communications also taking place on March 1st here at the Town Hall at 5:30 p.m. in Conference Room 1.
Thank you, Your Worship. Tomorrow, you and I have the Transportation Steering Committee meeting at the Region at 9:30.
Correct. And Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. We have an Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, 4:30 p.m. here at Town Hall in Conference Room 1. And we also have a Senior Citizens Advisory Committee meeting 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning at the Douglas Heights Senior Center building. Thank you.
The date on that one?
For senior citizens, Wednesday morning, March 1st.
March 1st. Thank you. Any others? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. We have a Ridgeway BIA meeting on March the 1st, this Wednesday, at 5:30 at the Ridgeway Legion. Also, I just wanted to mention that on Friday evening, I attended the Niagara Entrepreneur Year of the Year Award ceremony. And there were three businesses that were up for awards in three different categories. Two of the businesses didn't make it, but were in great competition, and it was an honor to be nominated. The one business that did win an award was for the Hospitality and Tourism Award, and that was Regional Limousine, whose business resides on Jarvis Street in Fort Erie in Ward 1. So I think it's important to notice that their hard work has paid off.
Yes, thank you very much for mentioning that. I had meant to make that announcement during my opening announcements, but I'm glad that you mentioned it because that's quite an honor, and it's for the whole region. And so Nick and Julie Brady should be very, very proud, as are we. Any other meetings? Then, Councillor Nutt, you have the final resolution.
Thank you, Your
what a
Worship.
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes.
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council adjourns at 8:01 p.m. to reconvene in a regular meeting of Council on March 27, 2017.
Thank you. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Thank you very much.